This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Now, if you have a question, you can reach Zorba right now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some interesting topics to talk over, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about losing weight by eating a big breakfast. Does that make a difference?
A big breakfast can take off the pounds.
Yeah, Mom said breakfast was the most important meal of the day. Let's see if that is true. And we're going to talk about Zicam. Removing Zicam, that remedy, from the market. What does that mean for homeopathic remedies? What does it mean for, if it's natural, implications that it means it's safe? So we're going to talk about Zicam.
Okay, sounds like interesting stuff. And we also have a recipe, this one from April Thompson of Nine Mile Falls, Washington.
That's right. April's got April summer slaw. It's a dynamite alternative to regular coleslaw. Aren't you tired of eating that regular coleslaw? Well, April has got a dynamite recipe. Try it. You'll like it.
And don't forget, we have a medical myth buster coming up later in the hour. Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Grays Lake, Illinois. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I have a bit of a mystery that I'm trying to solve, and I don't know if it's medical, but I was hoping you could tell me. Mm-hmm. I have a 3.5-year-old boy who for the last 6 months has tried very hard to stay away from anything that has a pattern on it.
What do you mean?
A shirt, pair of shorts, socks, shoes, anything that has a pattern of any kind on it.
You mean anything like checks or
writing,
design?
Thomas the Tank Engine, Elmo, and it's getting worse.
Like that ugly shirt Zorba has on with those leaves on it, that your son wouldn't like that?
He would probably oppose it. He is now even trying to tell me not to wear certain things because they have patterns on it. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to his bed sheets, his shoes. And lately, it's gotten so bad that now he just wants white.
Now, beyond the pattern issues of the fact that he doesn't want anything with patterns, any other changes in his behavior that are unusual? Anything else that seems to be out of sorts and is changing?
I'm laughing because he has taken to memorizing skits from radio shows.
Wow. Memorizing skits from radio shows.
As well as the Lawrence Welk show.
Wait a second. You're watching Lawrence Welk on television? I thought you have to be 70 or older to watch
that. Exactly. This was absolutely not intentional.
Thank you. Lawrence Welk is not intentional.
It's public television, right?
He happened to catch it on PBS in Milwaukee.
Yeah, public. It must be pledge time.
It must be pledge time because it's Lawrence Welk. Actually, that's what it is. They play Lawrence Welk on pledge time, and it brings in huge amounts of money for people who are happy to see those bubbles and a one and a two and a three and Lawrence Welk.
He conducts along with Lawrence Welk, and he has memorized a lot of the songs.
Wow.
And he does a Prairie Home Companion, a full set of skits. Anyway, this is sort of the oddity about him.
Well, that's the issue that comes to mind with this is whether or not he may have some element of obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. I mean, that's the question. You know, you may prefer things. You may say, my color is blue and I'd like to have everything with blue, but then you put on another color and the kids usually adjust to it and it's not their favorite. The fact that he's becoming very particular in his dress is actually something that is concerning. You know, he does other things that are obviously normal and it's something that's concerning with that. I think he needs to be evaluated by a clinical psychologist. He really does,
okay.
Even at 3.5. And the reason is it's disconcerting when you go from a preference to an I won't do it on something as innocuous as clothes. Now, when it comes to food, we all know that there's certain foods kids aren't going to eat and they're acceptable.
Right.
But he needs an evaluation to see whether or not he's got an element of OCD. you know, or some other variation, some other psychiatric variation that doesn't come into my mind now. But you want to know what's going on because he's moved him into a corner, and you want to begin a corner in terms of his preference, and you want to begin to develop behavioral advice that you can do to sort of move him. Yes, honey, you don't like a pattern, but these are the shoes that we wear. You know, so we'll get a pattern that you like. Because if he limits himself only to white and non-patterns and he won't step on pattern floors, then there's something else that's going on. So
okay. So
he needs a clinical evaluation. Call your family doc, pediatrician, and say, who do I bring him to? This is the issue. Clinical psychologist or clinical psychiatrist is going to evaluate him and see what part of normal this is or abnormal this is, give you a way then of good advice on how to take care of him.
Clinical psychologist. Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure. Our pleasure.
Thanks a lot. There are shirts that you would kick and scream.
Yes, there are. And there are shirts that my wife kicks and screams when I wear them because I'm not known to be what you would define in society as a good dresser. Let's just put it that way.
I'm not going to argue with you. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, let's get to this big breakfast diet. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. Now, it's very interesting. You know, losing weight, what diet? Is it the Atkins diet or the South Beach diet? Where do carbohydrates fit in? And there are lots of issues involved with this because one issue is whether or not high fructose corn syrup, which in our body can be the same as lots of carbohydrates because fructose is a carbohydrate, whether or not that encourages us to eat more. We know that as we have more carbs available to us as a society, we've gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And the question is, does a big breakfast diet that essentially is a diet that is that has lots of bacon and eggs and lots of food that we like, what does that do for us? So scientists at Virginia Commonwealth University looked at diets, and they basically compared their high carb and protein with a big breakfast diet that essentially would have strict low carbs afterwards. And 46 women on the very low carb diet, they consumed about 1,000 calories a day with 17 grams of carbohydrate and lots of fat. The smallest meal was breakfast. So in other words, they didn't have a big breakfast. They had kind of a tiny breakfast, only 290 calories. And they compared them with women who had a big breakfast who basically consumed 1,200 calories, still a low-calorie diet. But they had a big breakfast diet. They had a 610-calorie diet, so they had more than half their calories for the entire day at breakfast. And lo and behold, at 8 months, 8 months later, the low-carb diet, basically, low-carb, low-breakfast diet, they basically, not only they regained most of their weight back, they regained 18 pounds of their weight. They all lost some weight because it was that. But the people who had this huge breakfast, really good, big, substantial breakfast, not only did they not gain their weight back, but they continued to lose weight.
Did they have overall the same number of calories?
Well, they were pretty similar in terms of calories.
So
a big breakfast may attenuate your calories for the rest of the day because you don't feel like eating.
But if you're having the same number of calories during the day.
Well, no, but it was afterwards. Then they were let out to do their usual care. In other words, they're strict with their calories at the beginning and then go back to your regular dieting and see what happens. You know, most people can't stay on these diets for more than a month or two.
You know.
Then they go back. The issue, the bottom line issue with this is that breakfast may indeed be very important, and a big breakfast may be very important to making you feel full through the day. Now, a lot of studies have shown that people who have breakfast don't weigh as much. These are just studies that are out there that just show people who eat breakfast tend not to be as heavy as people who skip breakfast. Mm-hmm. Most people who diet say, well, I don't have anything for breakfast and I don't have anything for lunch, and then I'm really hungry at dinner. And then people say, well, maybe it's because you eat at the end of the day. Maybe that's not the problem. Maybe the problem is if you eat a lot at the beginning of the day, you don't want to snack throughout the day. You don't want to eat too much throughout the day. And so maybe what we should be teaching people is bacon and eggs and sausage. Go to that greasy spoon.
My kind of diet.
Your kind of diet, and maybe that will attenuate or loosen the desire to eat calories throughout the day. The issue with Americans is still carbs. I mean, we consume them in massive amounts, and that's why we're massive. That's why we've become massive.
Yeah. So. Interesting. 800-462-7413. To Manitowoc, Wisconsin, we go now. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Tom and Zorba.
What's up?
Well, I'm calling out a concern for my husband. He has a strong family history of cardiac problems, and about a year ago he had a CAT scan of his heart done, and it showed a calcium reading of 365, which is high.
So
he's
calcium,
in good health.
And I want to explain what that is. These are CAT scans where we look at calcium, calcified plaques. In other words, calcified plaques are plaques where basically you had hardening of the arteries, you have some deposits of cholesterol, they're old, and they become calcified. And those turn out to be stable plaques. They're not unstable, but they can be a marker for the fact that you may have other plaques in your body that are not stable. So,
okay.
Good. So he's got a high calcium score on his scan.
Yeah, he does.
Okay.
Otherwise, he's in good health. He doesn't smoke. He exercises. Blood pressure and cholesterol are good. But with that high family history of cardiac problems, he did see his doctor, and he suggested a 81 milligram aspirin tablet for him daily.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
He decided to take instead garlic, which is anti-inflammatory, because he says, you know, he thought it would do the same thing.
It doesn't do the same thing. Garlic is not aspirin. Ask anyone with a headache. Take garlic, doesn't get rid of your headache, period. It's not the same drug. Now, he can take garlic, and it may be anti-inflammatory, but aspirin is aspirin is aspirin. Nothing compares to aspirin. It's a completely different drug by itself. Other anti-inflammatories, be it naproxen or ibuprofen or anything else, they don't compare to aspirin. He doesn't have to take aspirin, and if he wants to read the literature on aspirin, he can go to PubMed.gov and read about that. But garlic is not aspirin.
What do you mean he does not? He doesn't have to take aspirin?
Well, he may decide not to do it. Aspirin, we recommend aspirin because it reduces the risk of heart attack and stroke in men, but it can increase the risk of hemorrhagic stroke because your blood doesn't clot in your brain as much. So if you hit your head, you're more likely to bleed. And so there's a benefit-risk ratio. There's a little risk from taking it, but there's a benefit from taking it. You decide. But if you think garlic will work as well as aspirin, it doesn't. You know, that's a mistake. Now, some people say, which is okay, I don't want to take aspirin. I don't want to take that drug in my body.
Mm-hmm.
I think then taking a natural anti-inflammatory like garlic may be useful, but it's never been studied. There's no double-blind study that shows that it works like that. On the other hand, it's a complementary medicine that may indeed give you some help for that. So.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure, we appreciate the call. 800-462-7413. What's your question for Zorba? A listener now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I have been having some trouble with my wrists. Right at the point on the side of my wrist where my thumb sort of connects to my wrist, I have really bad pain whenever I put any pressure on it. The trouble started about 12 years ago when I was doing a lot of pottery. So I was doing that repetitive motion. And when I went to the doctor at that point, the doctor called it de Quervain syndrome, not carpal tunnel, but this other thing, and suggested that I wear a brace that would immobilize my thumb. So I did that. And after a while, it did get better. And then about 5 months ago, just before I had a baby, it came back. It came back in both wrists. And it is really painful, so I got the braces again, and I've been wearing them, but I can only wear them at night because, of course, I can't put braces on my hands when I have a four-month-old. So I am just wondering if Dr. Pastor has any suggestions for that. Someone had recommended a cortisone shot. But I just didn't know.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that. This is really, it's a joint problem and a ligament problem, and it can be recurrent, just like you said. And here it is, we have opposable thumbs, and we need them.
Right.
We need to be able to use them.
Right.
You know, it separates us from the primates, you know, and it's
hopefully.
Not... Hopefully. Yes, hopefully, that's right. Oh, it separates some of us from the primates. I've met some primates myself in my life. But there are some things that you can do of a non-injection type nature. The answer is, first of all, you can have steroid injections. Sometimes they help. That's kind of down the line. You don't want to do that initially because steroids can help the joint, but you're entering a joint and they can produce problems. So you kind of want to, kind of want to wait for that. But one of the things you can do is you can go to physical therapy. Have you ever gone to physical therapy for this?
No. Like I said, I just wore the braces.
Physical therapy can be excellent, and I'll tell you why. What you do is they can give you exercises that you do with your thumb that are not painful to the joint, that build up the intrinsic muscles of the thumb and the muscles of the wrist that are higher, so you put less pressure on the joint.
Okay.
One of the sort of cardinal rules in joint problems are if you build up the muscles on both sides of the joint, the muscles take the stress and the joint takes less stress.
Okay.
I mean, that's what happens. The muscles end up being there and they take it. And so they can give you exercises that you do with these little rubber bands called TheraBands. And through a series of exercises over time, you can often overcome this using the braces as needed. So that's one step. So I'd recommend, A, calling your doc saying, I need to go to physical therapy because you can't go there without a prescription. I'd also look at the web and look at exercises on the web. But there's nothing like having a personal physical therapist doing it one time to show you and show you what to do right and what you may be doing that's wrong in terms of lifting your baby. Now, you taking anti-inflammatories right now?
No, not regularly.
You know, are you nursing your baby?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How old is your baby?
4 months.
Oh,
and he is a big boy, which makes picking him up even harder.
He's a big boy.
Yeah.
So you're nursing your baby's a big boy, so you must have cream there. That's obviously the case because he's obviously doing well. But anti-inflammatories are safe for your baby because we give them. We give ibuprofen, for instance, to a baby to reduce the fever.
Okay.
So I would recommend that you take 600 milligrams, that's 3 over-the-counter tablets of ibuprofen 3 times a day. See what that does. If that takes care of the pain, stay on it. And the reason is you've got to lift your baby.
Okay, so now doesn't the ibuprofen have the possibility of irritating my stomach?
Well, yeah, but most people tolerate it. 95% of the people tolerate it, so
you
take it. Most people, I mean, I never take it with food, and it doesn't upset my stomach. Other people can't take it. And if that's the case, you lower it to 2 tablets 3 times a day.
I have taken it before, but not regularly day after day after day.
Does it upset your stomach?
No.
It's probably not going to upset your stomach. It's also an issue with older adults. It can upset your stomach. But since you had a baby, we know you're not in the senior citizen set.
Well, I feel like it these days.
It does tend to be like that. So, well, good luck to you.
Great. Well, thanks so much for the advice.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We appreciate the call. And before we get to recipe time, Zorba, let's take a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox from a listener in Ozark, Alabama. I plan to donate blood next month and wish to know what foods I should eat to increase the iron in my blood. I do not want to take iron pills.
Red meat. That's exactly what it is. The red that's in the meat is hemoglobin, basically. It's iron. The red you see in red meat is an iron-containing pigment. That's, for the most part, what you're actually doing it. And we know that Americans tend not to be iron deficient because they eat red meat. So that's basically what it is.
Is there anything besides red meat?
Well, you could be a Maasai warrior and just drink blood. That would be okay, too. That would take care of it. But I don't think you could be Polish and have blood sausage. And I've tasted that, and that's pretty tasty, but that wouldn't be it. But you can look on the web and see what other iron-containing foods there are. For instance, spinach has iron in it. That's a very good example if you're a vegetarian. The best way to know about foods, the easiest way for you to look at it, is you go to Google and you put down iron foods. That's what you write down, and you will pop up some very good websites. We'll also put it. We'll put iron-containing foods on the resource page of our website, and so if you go there, you're going to find out where you can get your iron source.
Is there any problem with taking iron pills?
No, but there's a problem. A lot of people, it causes an upset stomach.
Yep.
A lot of people, it causes constipation. A number of people, they don't like the fact that their stool turns black and looks yucky. So, iron pills, a lot of people don't tolerate them. Big problem for women in pregnancy if they don't tolerate them. So,
Have a tip you want to share with the show? Send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Coming up, April's Summer Slaw from a listener in Nine Mile Falls, Washington. More of your calls, too, and our medical mythbuster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Glad to have you along. If you have a question for Zorba, you know that number, 800-462-7413. Before our next call, it is, of course, Zorba recipe time, and for that, we're happy to welcome from Nine Mile Falls, Washington, listener April Thompson. April, hi.
Hello.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you. And how about yourself?
We're fine.
Wonderful.
April's summer slaw. We're going to put that together. How'd you come up with this recipe?
Oh, gosh. I'd say probably about eight years ago, my husband's aunt made a coleslaw with rice wine vinegar. And I think she had some honey in there.
Mm-hmm.
And when it tasted, I was like, oh, that'd be great. It'd be great with lime. I love lime. So I tried it out and added some ginger to it and tweaked it a little bit, and that's what I had.
Mm-hmm. And everybody likes this?
They do. The kids love it. They dig it. They just, it's great on sandwiches. It's great with chips. I've added jalapenos to it, so you can eat it like a salsa. And it's great. You can add, it's kind of nice because you can add whatever you want. If you wanted to add bell peppers to it or whatever, and kind of make it your own.
I like this. First of all, I love the fact that you've made coleslaw into a healthy dish.
Well, thank you.
Because that's a challenge, because our brains go coleslaw mayonnaise, coleslaw
exactly.
Fat. We don't need fat. We want to eradicate fat. We want to keep fiber in our diet. And cabbage is cheap. It's inexpensive. Of all the things, you look at head of cabbage in volume versus spring mix, which I happen to like. And spring mix is like $3.50. And cabbage is the cheapest thing that you can buy practically in the store.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what's nice is you can put this on a sandwich.
A lot of people
put sauerkraut, so you can put this instead of lettuce.
That's
so
right, sauerkraut. Now, you said sauerkraut. So do you drink kraut juice?
I do.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe
vinegar.
It. I found somebody who drank kraut juice. You drink kraut juice.
And pickle juice. I love it.
I have to tell you, I've got wonderful cousins, California. They're restaurateurs. They have an Italian restaurant. They have a sit-down, very fancy restaurant. They have a breakfast restaurant. And when they came to Wisconsin, we were out shopping, and my cousin picked up the bottle of kraut juice, and he said, "What's this?" I mean, they don't sell it outside of the state practically. He said, "What's this?" I said, "It's kraut juice." He said, "People drink this?"
Yeah, right. He's a
good.
Smart person.
It's, yeah.
Now that you've killed our appetite.
All right.
Let's do the recipe.
Let's do the recipe. Okay, we start out with a medium head of cabbage, finely sliced.
Uh-huh.
Okay. One half small head of red cabbage, finely sliced.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A medium head of cabbage, finely sliced, and half a small head of red cabbage, finely sliced.
That's right, and that's kind of nice because it gives it the color and the look. You could use all one cabbage, but I like using red cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
One or two scallions, again, finely sliced.
Mm-hmm.
A scallion or two.
That's right. Carrots peeled and grated. Now, do you use the carrots that are pre-grated in a little plastic bag, or do you grate them yourself?
And that's what's nice, especially with the girls helping out, is that they can grate the carrots.
It's fun. This is a dish that you make with your kids. I am a great believer in cooking with children. It's going to be my new show, Cooking with Children.
But then
they'll eat different kinds of food. So that's what we need. Cooking with children in a healthy way. Can you picture now a doctor there and maybe a 3-year-old child cooking together? I think it'll make good television. I'm ready for it.
Did you cook with your kids?
Of course. I did cook with my kids. Yeah. They're really good. I think it's a great. And my kids love to cook. They love good food. And that's because I think it's an important part of life.
Mm-hmm.
Two to three limes or 4 to 6 tablespoonfuls of lime juice.
Well, yeah. And that's kind of, it depends. I'm not sure. I just kind of throw everything together. Mm-hmm. So limes to taste. Yeah.
Limes to
whatever
taste.
You get from the limes. So,
now, you have noticed, I take it, a big difference between fresh limes and limes that are in reconstituted limes.
Yeah. I prefer the fresh limes.
I
really do. And, again, the kids, if you have kids, just tell them, roll the ball like a Play-Doh, roll it around, and it gets it all pre-juiced for you.
Really?
And they have fun.
So wait a minute.
Here.
Roll around the lime? You mean you play with it on the floor?
Yeah, or on the table.
When
you roll a ball of Play-Doh, you push down on it and you roll it, and it gets it all pre-juiced.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
You mean when you slice it, what happens?
Well, Well, you cut it in half, and it's already pretty much juiced. You just have to squeeze it, and all the juice comes right out. You don't have to worry about using a juicer. Yeah, it's great.
Far out.
And it gets that fun.
Far out. That's all I can say. Far out. 2 teaspoons of ginger, freshly grated.
Little tea ginger.
Okay, now I have a tip for you. Do you keep your ginger in the refrigerator or in the freezer?
You know what? I keep it out on the counter because I use it so much.
Yeah, which is great. If you use it all the time, the counter is great. If not, put it in the freezer.
Okay.
And it grates really easily from the freezer. You grate it right from the freezer, and it's a great way to store ginger. And then 2 tablespoonfuls of honey.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
This is a nice combination. You get the lime and the honey. It sounds delicious.
It's good. And the thing about it is, if you make all the stuff in a separate bowl, like the dressing, you can add, I mean, if you want more lime, you can add more lime. If you want ginger, you can add more ginger, you know, and it's great. I mean, it's just to taste. So whatever you want.
I love it. Yep. Then you mix the cabbage, the scallions, the carrots in one bowl. Mm-hmm, in a separate bowl, mix together a lime juice, ginger, honey, everything else together. And then you put the mixtures together and enjoy it. I love it. I think it is a great recipe. I know we have lots and lots of people who are going to download this on the podcast are going to write it down. It's great, April. I think that you have helped America eat healthier and help teach our children how to cook delicious food.
Wonderful.
April, you're great.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
And you've taught Zorba how to get the juice out of a lime.
Yeah, there you go. Another tip.
Thank you again. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. And for sending us this winning recipe, April gets a free copy of our cookbook, of course, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And for today's recipe, send a stamped, self-addressed, business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
Or come to our website at ZorbaPastor.org. You can look at great resources, find this recipe, and sign up for our weekly podcast.
Toll free if you have a question for Dr. Zorba Pastor. A listener now in Edwardsville, Illinois. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Okay. I have a question about plastic water bottles. For environmental reasons, I switched to the Nalgene-type water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody says that, you know, they leach the toxins into your water, and you might as well just buy the plastic or the disposable water bottles. So then I switched to stainless steel water bottles. They leak a lot. There's just a lot of problems with them. So then now they have the PBA-free water bottles. I mean, what solves this problem? Are the PBA Nalgene bottles really the problem solvers here?
Okay, so I'll tell you some interesting stuff. First of all,
last time we talked about water bottles, we got a lot of flack, by the way. Zora.
Yes. We get a lot of flack because of this very controversial issue. And I want to go back to the controversial issue and remind people the same thing occurred with aluminum and aluminum products 10 and 20 years ago, with the fact that aluminum is leaching into the supply, producing Alzheimer's, and that's why we have an increase in Alzheimer's. And it's my belief that the plastic issues that are around there are very, very interesting, but as soon as you have people in environmental issues on both sides of something, what you do is you get lots of people who become zealots in one direction and the other direction. So let's look at the science. The science is weak. Now, the Canadian government said, well, a lot of people are using the water bottles. We think the science is weak. So a number of people at a committee meeting decided we're going to take these water bottles and we're going to say you shouldn't use them. And we may go one step further and actually ban them. And they're in the process of debating that in Canada among, you know, with, once again, weak science. So whether or not these water bottles actually cause a decrease in fertility, whether or not it actually causes cancer, cancer, and this the plastic that they put in the water bottles makes it hard and firm. It was sort of like the best plastic that they could make.
Right.
And then you go to glass water bottles, and what you'll have are other issues. Yes, glass is great, but it's not really very functional when you're traveling because it tends to break. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at the injuries associated with glass and the number of people who will die from glass injuries or from eating glass, because you've got to calculate that all in with any risk ratio, glass is really not a good alternative. I mean, it's not going to work. Well, then you go, as you said, to aluminum bottles, which are really a can, and you go, well, the seals aren't really very good because they begin to break with the seal.
Yeah.
So I think that this is very similar to going out on a rainy day. Okay, you go out on a rainy day with your car and you drive down the road. It's not as safe as a sunny day at noon driving down the road. Mm-hmm. I think the water bottles carry with them a possible risk, which is the same as driving on a rainy day. The risk is very debatable. There's no hard evidence about it. It's soft evidence. And once again, we'll get a flurry of emails that say, well, there's this study and that study and this study. Right now, the FDA and the CDC say the evidence is soft. If we acted on everything that has soft evidence and we started making changes in our society, we would be whipsawed by what we do. And then people argue and say, well, you can take aspirin, but now you shouldn't take aspirin. What about water bottles? What about this? So I think that they carry minimal risk, and I have not thrown out my Nalgene, and I drive when it rains outside, and I wear my seatbelts, and I try not to talk on the cell phone, and I try to eat a healthy diet, and I kind of put it in that realm. But I think there's a lot of hullabaloo, and people have gone off the deep end about plastic, and all those people will write me. At this particular time. Now, if there's good research that comes out, I'm going to, you know, go to that side. But right now, I think it's like the aluminum research with Alzheimer's. I think it fits in the same realm.
Well, Gord, thank you very much.
Sure, you're welcome.
Call. You know, there was a day, Zorba, which you remember and I remember, when people didn't carry water around with them all the time.
Well, the other issue is that, really, you don't have to drink and flush your kidneys. You don't actually flush your kidneys. The best way to drink is when you're thirsty and not to drink when you're not thirsty. And basically, Americans carry water with them all over. They don't do that in Europe.
Yeah.
When they're thirsty, they go and have a drink of water.
Yeah. George Carlin, rest his soul, did a routine on that one time. How silly Americans are. We have to carry our water with us. Here's our water. Here's our water. Well, always have our water with us. We have to have our water with us. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba Pastor. On we go, Zorba, to Branson, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, guys.
What's up?
Well, I'm surrounded by believers in supplements and vitamins,
mm-hmm.
and I have my noni lover friends and my mangosteen lover friends, and then I found this Fiberbiotics, and I have to tell you, every morning when I open the refrigerator and I look on the counter at the Fiberbiotic wafers and I see the noni and I see the mangosteen, and then I look at my plain old orange juice, and I feel like I'm playing supplement checkers.
The only thing I understood about any of that was orange juice.
Yeah.
What's the rest of that stuff?
Well, the noni lovers, you know, they espouse all the wonderful attributes of the tropical fruit. Of course, it comes from Hawaii, and it's a, you know, okay, it tastes good,
mm-hmm.
and it claims all kinds of good things to help you feel better. The mangosteen, the Zango, you know, there are lots of claims of lowering cholesterol and feeling good, and you know, the things that come with Zango that they claim the anti-inflammatory and antioxidants. Personally, I found the Fiberbiotics, which are packed with fiber, antioxidants, and then everything. And I mean this, guys, from broccoli and spinach to pineapple and papaya with ginger root thrown in. I mean, it just seems to have everything. Then to add to all of this checkers of supplements, mm-hmm. I saw my mother this weekend, and she is a very, very healthy 75-year-old, but she drinks the Metamucil fiber thing. And I gave her Fiberbiotics and said, this is for you. And she said, well, do I mix them? You know, so I'm not sure what to do, and, you know, can I continue with my supplement checkers? One day it's Noni, one day it's Zango. I just really don't know what to do.
Well, it's fascinating. You know, Americans are, compared to our European counterparts, who, by the way, live longer than we do and are healthier in every measurement than we do, Americans look at food and all food and food products generally as something that is medicinal, that makes us healthier, whereas the Europeans tend to look at food as something that is delicious and makes them happier. So it it's healthier on one side, happier on the other side. And when we look at things such as noni, as you said, you know, there are people who are very interested in one versus another, and it becomes almost a religion. You know, you take your noni juice every morning, and that does something. The real issue is a variety of fruits and vegetables seems to be the best insurance against cancer and heart disease. So when we talk about 5 to 7 servings, 7 being much better, and a serving being a handful of fruits and vegetables every single day, we're talking about a variety of fruits and vegetables. So the checkers that you're playing turns out to be probably the best thing, because you're having this supplement here and this supplement there, and one may be a little better for this and one may be a little better for that. And I compliment you on doing that and playing checkers. Taking them all at one time will destroy your bank account, because these things are much more expensive than fruits and vegetables. Now, as for mom, she needs fiber because she wants those regular bowel movements every day. That's what moms often want at the age of 75. So Metamucil, which you can also get in a natural food store, is absolutely fine. It's basically the a grain that we use, psyllium grain. It's a seed, and it just is a high fiber issue. And whether or not you want to give her something else, well, I think it's an issue of what she would like to take. But I wouldn't load your mother with something else. I think you can play checkers and leave her to play her Metamucil game.
Well, I tell you, the good thing is if you're going to put out the money for these things, which I do, and I am a believer, but it also forces you into exercise, because you think, if I'm going to do this, I better exercise to make it all worthwhile.
There you go. Exercise away. Enjoy your supplement checkers.
And thank you for my mother.
Oh, thank you both. And thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Our medical myth buster is coming up. More of your calls, too. Oh, and some more research here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. We'll be getting to the calls after talking a bit, Zorba, about something seems important to me. The feds have pulled a drug from the market.
That's right. Well, the question is, what is it, a drug or not? The drug is Zicam. Now, it's not technically a drug. It's a homeopathic remedy, which means it falls under the supplement part of the FDA Act. And as such, basically, it's not a regulated product. So the FDA doesn't regulate it unless the public health is involved in safety, and that's what happened. The FDA went and raided the office of Zicam because they got complaints that people that were using Zicam nasal swabs, where they put them in their nose, were losing their sense of smell, and they've got something like 150, nearly 200 people have said they have lost their sense of smell by using Zicam in their nose.
How long has this stuff been on the market?
It's been on the market for a few years, and what has happened is the company just kind of ignored, I mean, that's from what I can tell from the data, ignored the fact that people said they lost their sense of smell and said, well, this doesn't cause a loss of a sense of smell, so how could this possibly happen? So the FDA came in, pulled the records. The company, quote, voluntarily, temporarily took it out of their market. Their stock, I think, fell 70% on that particular day. But I think this brings up a very important point having to do with homeopathic natural remedies. We have this belief, well, if it's homeopathic and natural, it must be okay. Must be safe. Can't harm you. Well, this is a good example where it did harm you. I mean, you don't want to lose your sense of smell just because you took something. That doesn't really work for the common cold. Yeah. That's why people were taking it. There was no scientific proof it even worked for colds.
I assume there hasn't been research on this. How did they know that this was the cause?
Well, the answer is when 180 to 200 people say they used this and they lost their sense of smell, then the first thing you do is pull the drug and check it for safety. Now, the only way to truly find out is to do a double-blind placebo-controlled trial where half the people get it and half the people don't. Power it with enough people. So would you be willing to do a trial like that where you lose your sense of smell? No. No, of course not. Of course not. Yeah. And would never get through a human subjects committee. But the fact is, how often do people lose their sense of smell? It's not a common event.
That's right.
It's not a common event.
I buy that totally. Yeah. Why were people using this stuff?
They were using it to, you've got a cold, take our Zicam product. It'll help you with your cold. It'll make you more robust. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the fact is, colds go away by themselves. And we use a variety of things because we don't like it, from ibuprofen to antibiotics. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, it takes time to get rid of the cold. And because it's homeopathic, doesn't mean it's safe.
Yeah. In this case, good for the FDA, right?
Yes. Good for the FDA. Good job. Keep up the good work, because the FDA is now out there and helping us.
800-462-7413. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Tallahassee, Florida. Hi.
Hey there, gentlemen. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Okay. Probably going about 5 years ago, no good deed goes unpunished. On Mother's Day, I crawled up a tree at my parents' house and put a bunch of orchids in the tree for my mom on Mother's Day. And unfortunately, I didn't inspect the tree first. It was covered in poison ivy.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh.
Yeah.
Well, in other words, you climbed up a poison ivy tree.
We'll talk about the poison ivy, but you climbed up a tree and put flowers in the – what, was your mom supposed to then climb up the tree to get those flowers?
No. They were outside the kitchen window so she could see them.
Oh.
How sweet is that?
No, and they're still blooming 5 years later. She loves them. So it was a good investment, even if it covered me from head to toe in poison ivy.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up with a bad case of the poison ivy, and it literally would not go away. And after about 3 or 4 weeks of being covered in this, I went to the doctor, and they gave me a injection of a steroid. I believe it was a Deca something. I don't know what it was exactly. But after the poison ivy went away, I realized that I was having this kind of, I thought it was an allergic reaction. I don't know what it was, but it's persisted over the last 5 years. I get mainly like when I'm going to sleep, and a lot of times after I eat pizza, certain pizzas, I get these spots just on the inside of, there's no visible sign, but there's an itching that is like someone is lighting a match under my skin in the crease of my elbow, on the left arm, and in the armpit, but not in the pit, kind of up around the shoulder area, where it just itches to the point where I want to take a fork and just gouge it out.
But you don't actually take the fork and gouge it out.
No, I don't.
And you think this is...
I take an ice pick.
You think this is related to the tree climbing from years ago?
I never had this before that, and it started occurring almost, a couple of weeks after I took this steroid, and it has persisted ever since. Uh-huh. And it's the strain. It doesn't. I can go months without it, and then I'll either eat something and it'll trigger it, or a lot of times I'll eat something and go to bed and wake up in the middle of the night, and it's just driving me insane.
Well, a couple of things may be going on. First of all, you may be reactivating a basic allergic reaction that occurred, contact allergy, contact dermatitis that occurred with the poison ivy. So you're reactivating it by food or by the soap you are using. What kind of soap do you wash yourself with? Do you pay attention to the soap, or do you buy what's on sale?
I just buy whatever's on the first one on the shelf when I'm walking by.
Okay. Well, soap goes under your armpit, and soap may turn out to be much more of an issue than you think. Deodorant soaps, Lifebuoy is a good example of a deodorant soap. Irish Spring Dial soaps dry you out and tend to cause much more itching than a non-deodorant soap such as Dove. So my recommendation is be specific, stay on Dove soap, don't just buy the cheapest soap that's there, or Lever 2000 is another good example, because this may be a soap issue and not a food issue.
Okay.
And food might be part of it, but soap is probably a major part of it. So that's what I would look at. Then, if it still bothers you and you're upset, what you need to get from your doctor is triamcinolone cream. It's called TMC, like Tom, Mary, Charlie, TMC cream. It's a steroid cream, can be used by people on and off. And if you're itching in the middle of the night or for a few days, you put the cream on. to steroid cream. It usually reduces the itch. It's great. If you've got an itch in the middle of the night, you go put this cream on, and then you go back to sleep, which is, of course, the goal.
At that point, will it stop the itch?
It may stop the itch then. It may work. If not, a little Benadryl at nighttime may also stop the itch and put you back to sleep. 50 milligrams of Benadryl. 25 may work, but 50 is going to work better. And that may put the itch back. So I would take some Benadryl and put the cream on when you're bothered. But I think it's a soap issue, and I think food might be secondary.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate the call.
Our pleasure.
800-462-7413. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today, and it comes to us from Todd in Madison, Tennessee. Todd writes, is exercise in bad air better than no exercise at all? Or are there exercise environments that suggest no exercise may be better than exercising in polluted air?
Well, this is an extremely important question, and there are a lot of issues. And the answer is mixed on this. We know that exercise is good. It's good for our cardiovascular system. It makes us feel good. It often reduces weight. It reduces the risk of heart attack and stroke and so on. But we know that when you exercise, when it's a high ozone level or lots of carbon monoxide or lots of particulate matter, i.e. in the city by an expressway, that these fine particles can get into your bloodstream and they can be bad for you. So if you've got lung disease at all, the answer is no. You want to exercise inside versus outside. And frankly, the interesting thing is inside exercise is less likely to give you an injury than outside exercise. And air pollution definitely affects your body in a bad way. And this is a big issue. The issue is what to do. So if you do it early in the morning or late in the evening when there are fewer cars around, that's a little better. Avoid the midday time. Don't go by congested streets. Don't go by paces, which are factories. That's going to make things better. And the answer, once again, is mixed. And if you have lung disease, inside is the way to go.
Well, apparently, if you're of a certain age, too, because during these ozone warnings, they always say older people, be careful, don't.
That's because older people often have more problem, and they want to remind them, hey, you shouldn't go outside and do it. So it's really not a myth that you shouldn't exercise outside. It's really more true than myth.
Uh-huh. So the message from Dr. Zorba Pastor, don't exercise.
No, not exactly. You know, Tom, that's
I must have
why
misunderstood.
You're here. That's why you're here.
Interested in having Zorba bust your myth? Send it along in an email to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, toll free. And to a listener now, Zorba in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I'm just wondering if you have any new solutions for women who have pregnancy belly after they're all done with their childbearing.
Well, that's a toughie. That is a toughie. In other words, your belly is not back to the way it was. Right.
No, and right. It's really difficult to do anything about.
Yeah, it's very well. You know what's happened is you've stretched the muscles. I mean, that's the bottom line issue. The uterus is back to pretty much the same size it was before, but those muscles that were stretched and the ligaments and the tendons, you know, to go back to a nice flat belly. Some women do, some women don't. Exercise, you know, and crunches are only going to do so much for that belly, and that's the problem. And some women, frankly, if you go out to California. Beverly Hills, that's a big issue. A lot of women get plastic surgery to try to bring their belly back. And, you know, and it's a cosmetic surgical procedure. I'm not against cosmetic surgery at all. I think it's an individual way to spend your money. But, you know, other than trying to firm up the muscles, there's not a lot you can do. Do you have the the stretches from that?
Yes. And then yeah. I also had 2 C-sections.
Oh, and you had 2 C-sections. So you actually had your belly. You actually had your belly entered by a surgeon, an obstetrical surgeon who opened it up. And there's not a lot to do.
Okay.
Not a lot to do.
That's what I was checking.
Not a lot to do. There's not a lot to do. But there are really nice bathing suits at Land's End. and I own some stock in Land's End. No, I don't. But there really are nice bathing suits at Land's End. But this is a big issue. And if you look at women who wear bikinis, they tend to be pre-pregnant women. And I read People Magazine when I'm standing in the grocery store checking out. And then when I'm getting my hair done, I always look at People Magazine. And if you look at People Magazine, they always have beach pictures. And you look at beach pictures of famous women post-baby. They're rarely in a bikini. It's not that often. And when they are, they're showcased. Look at this one. She can still wear a bikini because, frankly, 90% can't. Or you can take the Rio Brazil approach, which is after you have your baby, you wear the bikini anyway, because all women have beautiful bodies, and after a baby, their bodies are still beautiful. They're just post baby.
Well, that's not happening anytime soon.
That's not it. See, my son married a delightful woman in Rio. We walked down the beach, and he was saying, but for the first time I went there and going down the beach, he said, "Dad, there a lot of women are wearing bikinis and thongs, and you'll see that in our society, a lot of these women would not be wearing bikinis and thongs." And he was right. He was right. It made no difference. A lot of the women were wearing exactly the same bathing suits, regardless of what their body habitus was. So. So good luck. I have no magic for this. And well, if I do, then I will let you know.
I appreciate it. That's nice to know. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Before we get out of here, Zorba, it's time to charge you with a citation from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police.
Great. I love them.
This fine comes from Deputy Roger in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and it's for the misuse of the word enervate. Not too long ago, we were helping a caller with her sleep hygiene, and you told her that watching TV before trying to sleep is enervating, which in her case would be beneficial. Enervating can mean to weaken or exhaust. Perhaps you meant to say invigorate.
Yes, I did.
Which is a common mistake.
Which is exactly what I meant to say. So that was a malaprop. With a malaprop in the same way as Mrs. Malaprop. So I malaprop, didn't I? I malaprop.
I guess, although.
So is this grammar or malaprop? What does it fit under? I want to know what umbrella does it fit under? It's English, but is
it isn't grammar.
It's not grammar.
No.
Maybe somebody can tell us, if you malaprop, where that fits into the lexicon of English words.
Anyway, I got to say, I tend to find these grammar police emails enervating. If you want to find Zorba, send us your citation in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week.
I shall be here, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Brad Wires Kohlberg is our technical director, and Charles Monroe Kane is our executive producer. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you're with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0627Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.